Support for KJZZ's coverage of tribal resources comes from Katina Foundation, dedicated to restoring human and ecological systems.
Most religions hold certain places sacred. For Christians, it's often churches, basilicas. For Jews, synagogues. For Muslims, mosques. For Native American people, those sacred sites, though, look a little different.
There have always been certain places, a mountaintop or a whole mountain sometimes, a particular spring, a tree grove, rock formations, riparian zones. These are places that Native peoples say have spiritual power.
That's Deborah Utasia-Kroll, Indigenous Affairs reporter for the Arizona Republic. She's out with a new project digging deep into the battles that have risen because of these sacred sites and attempts to mine, develop, or otherwise change them. Kroll says it's all because, unlike many other religions, Native Americans' religious beliefs are, by and large, land-based.
You can't take, say, Oak Flat and move it someplace else. And so this is a reason that Native peoples have sought to protect these places. That's where the spirituality is. That's where the holiness is. That's where, I guess, the best thing for a non-Indian person or a non-Native person, that's where God touches you.
I spoke with Kroll more about these battles over Native American sacred sites and the misunderstandings about these sacred lands that tribes face as they attempt to protect them.
If you are raised to believe that a religion is something you practice in a church or a synagogue or a mosque or some other place of worship, it's a little bit hard to wrap your head around the fact that a whole mountain range is considered a church, that a riparian zone and a creek and a Emery Oak Grove, that whole area is sacred, and it also is linked to the earth. For example, Oak Flat is fed by, I guess, for lack of a better term, an underground river system. These aquifers underneath the mountains are feeding streams. They're feeding Queen Creek. They're feeding Oak Flat. They're feeding Dripping Springs. And they're also emerging eventually to feed the Gila River watershed. So Native peoples also have that environmental connection to water. You know, that's why you hear a lot of Native peoples say water is life, because they understand that life is dependent on water, and not just any water, but drinkable water. That also conveys that sacredness, that whichever deity a particular tribal community worships, whether it's the Katsinam, the holy people, a spiritual person, a holy person in Apache religion. My tribe calls that person Kenshanal, creator. These holy people have instructed human people why it's sacred to preserve your water sites and why it's important to preserve these places that you can be close to the deity.
So in this very extensive series, you're looking at the challenges that tribes have faced and are facing in preserving and protecting these sacred spaces. They come up against laws. They battle in court. These sites are often on land also that has been taken away from tribes and made part of, you know, things like national parks or national forests, things like that, and now are out of the tribe's control. So I want to understand this, and let's start by doing that with an example. We all know the San Francisco Peaks in Flagstaff, the top of Mount Humphrey, and the peaks around that. We ski there. It's a tourist site. But that site is actually sacred to the Hopi people, right?
It's actually sacred to 13 different tribes.
Wow.
It's not just the Hopis, but Navajo people hold great spiritual significance to that area. Havasupai, Wallapai, Yavapai, some of the Paiute tribes. Zunis, they all have spiritual connections to the San Francisco Peaks. Clear back in the 80s, there was a movement to create artificial snow to supplement the natural snowfall on the San Francisco Peaks so people could go skiing and do snow sports or snowboarding. And the tribes were alarmed by it even then, because what they were going to use was partially reclaimed wastewater. I covered a gathering one time of Navajo and Hopi and Apache peoples. They feel that that reclaimed water, because it hasn't been 100% clean, it's not potable water, contaminates the mountain. So they have been fighting it pretty much ever since. But as you know, the Navajo Nation lost a lawsuit to try to stop it. Hopi has lost a lawsuit to stop it. And right now there's a movement to try to keep Snowball from expanding the site, to, in the words of one of the advocates, to try to prevent a bad situation from becoming worse.
So that's an example in which they have largely lost that battle. But there are other examples that you're going through in this series as well that are still in dispute, or and some that are sort of at the beginning of the battle that we can all see coming. We've reported some on the show about Oak Flat. Tell us about that and about the tribal interests and the sacred spaces that are there.
Well, Oak Flat, which is also known in Apache as a place where the emery oaks grow, is one of the most sacred sites to Apache peoples. It also holds great cultural and spiritual significance to a lot of the other neighboring tribes, such as the Yavapai, some of the Otham peoples, and even as far away as even the Peeposh, who live clear on the west side of the valley. Mm-hmm. That land was withdrawn from mining back in the Eisenhower era, and it had remained withdrawn from mining until 2014, when some Arizona senators and congressmen offered up a last-minute rider to a must-pass defense bill to try to get a land swap in there, where the copper company would give the government several thousand acres of land to trade for the 2,400 and so acres of Oak Flat. Mm-hmm. Because apparently one of the largest remaining copper deposits is underneath. The mm-hmm. way that the copper company wants to mine it is basically what they call block cave mining. The models that they have put on their website and put on YouTube show how eventually Oak Flat is going to become a sinkhole somewhere between 800 and 1,000 feet deep and almost 2 miles in diameter.
Wow.
The Apache people, once they learned about it, have been fighting that ever since. The first of three lawsuits is due to be heard in the U.S. Ninth Court of Appeals in October. They had filed initially on First Amendment religious protection rights, and the district court in Arizona turned it down based on the same Supreme Court decisions that they used to deny the San Francisco Peaks case and several other cases where tribes had, or tribes or tribal organizations had sued to stop a particular impact upon a sacred site. Now, that decision is called the Ling decision. My guess is that they're going to try to get Ling overturned. This is something that a lot of the law blogs are saying is going to be one of the big cases to watch this fall, because it could very well, if Apache Stronghold succeeds, basically create a whole new era in the realm of religious liberty protection. It doesn't have implications simply for Apache people and Yavapai people. It could have nationwide implications.
All right. Deborah Utasia Kroll, Indigenous Affairs reporter with the Arizona Republic, doing some great work there. Deb, thank you so much for coming on the show. We appreciate you taking the time and talking us through this and all the work you put into it.
Well, thank you for having me on again.